Welcome back, welcome back. It is your host, Sully, and joined by a long time coming host, co-host, Jessica Quaz. How are you from Second Chance Movies?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you and just talk about movies and horror and all the
fun
stuff.
We were back and forth, and then we were just like, shit, we've already done that. What do we do next? And then we opened up another discussion. I'm like, wait, you're a fan of that filmmaker? Yeah, let's talk about that. So thank you for being on here. And right now we're going to talk about beloved indie turned mainstream filmmaker Karun Kusama. You might know her work from Girl Fight, The Invitation, Iron Flux, and most recently is being a recurring producer and director on Yellow Jackets for Showtime. She was a native of St. Louis, Missouri, and graduated from the New York University Film Program. It was the Titch School of the Arts, and she has won a few different awards for her indie feature films, and this was great because I had an excuse to finally just rewatch Girl Fight with the commentary on.
Oh, nice.
Who the hell watches DVDs anymore besides this film bus? So she was given $1 million with 24 days to shoot Girl Fight, and the high school is an actual high school, and so the art department had less to worry about. But I did not know that she was working with indie film darling John Stiles. I knew he was a producer, but I didn't know it was that close a collaboration. He was giving her tips and advice, and it's just so wild how she was already kind of into boxing and everything. That was her fitness routine, and she channeled that into her indie film. But what's your take on her? Do you think she's going to keep rising as a big dramatic horror filmmaker now that she finally put the incident at Paramount behind her?
So I saw Girl Fight back in the day, and I really enjoyed it. Nice. But I didn't I was kind of younger. I was like in high school, and so I didn't really like start appreciating directors or their body of work. And then
the market was oversaturated at that point. It's like everything is an award accolade where it didn't really mean anything anymore. It's like, yeah, but why will you, the mainstream audience, like this indie? You know,
right? And like I really got into her work when The Invitation came out in 2015. Mm-hmm. I actually like went to the premiere of that without knowing anything about it. And I just went with a friend. And after the movie was over, I was blown away and wanted to know like everything about it and like who made this and what was going on here behind the scenes, because it was just wonderful. And then that's when I realized, oh, it's her. Oh, my God. Yeah, she's done awesome work. And then after that, like everything she's released has been really intriguing to me. I like that she sort of blends this like really interesting, I guess, like realism with horror, which it's how I would describe it. Where
she understands dark moods and everything, like just everything from just characters being literally drenched in shadows, and just good with montages without feeling like over the top music video style editing. I finally had an excuse to finally watch XX and Destroyer. And long story short, XX is pretty much everyone making experimental short films that don't really have much to do with each other and blending them together. But that's where she first worked with Melanie Lynskey, and that's why she's on Yellow Jackets. But when I saw Destroyer, did you see that one? That was like a Serpico Training Day type, you know, mixed of police corruption and bank robberies. I'm like, holy shit, I've seen all kinds of those movies, but this is atypical from that kind of movie.
Yes, it feels very unique, and that also feels again like almost like a realistic horror where everything that's going on is not like your typical horror feeling movie at all, but it just something about it feels so tense and uncomfortable that it borderlines like horror thriller, which is like really interesting for, like you said, that type of like police corruption, like on the case, the kind of movie.
Psychological. And I think it just helped that, again, you know, when she made Girl Fight, you know, that was just $1 million. She had 24 days to shoot. And it was basically she didn't want to, she knew her project could easily have backfired, like it could sound cliche or whatever, but she's like, I want to capture this war between romantic equals who are, you know, in a boxing fight between each other, and focus more on the music in the scene to ensure it was teary-eyed and showcase her labor of love, get this authenticity, get kind of this how anyone fighting can either destroy a person or be their life's work. And I think that's it. After Ion Flux got taken away from her by Paramount, I think everything from that point on became a personal boxing match.
That's a really interesting way to put it. Yeah, because I don't know.
The invitation you mentioned earlier, that doesn't feel like a typical psycho thriller where someone's finding out terrible truths about each other at a what's supposed to be a fun reunion party, you know? Yeah. Anyone else would have gone the whole, hey, let's go to slasher level. Oh, let's have a home invasion. Oh, let's do some torture porn. And it's like, this is mm-hmm. atypical. It's like everyone's just in the room finding each other's truths, and just like, and next thing you know, they're just like threatening each other, and you're like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to what you just said, where it's like there are fights within that movie, within like the characters themselves. Like our main protagonist is sort of fighting his own inner battles, then he's fighting with everyone else being like, guys, something is like super wrong here, like there's totally. And it's so interesting too, what I love about that movie is that, like you said, they keep it like as grounded as you can
contained,
with that kind of material. Yeah,
locations at the max, you know?
Yes. And like what does it for me with that movie every time is how they portray so subtly our protagonist. Is he actually like onto something, like, or is he actually just losing his mind and misinterpreting things? And then when it's revealed, you're like, oh shit, yeah, okay, he was oh, okay, good, I believed him. So but that movie, like, I don't know, like there's just something about that movie and how it, I don't know, like portrays, like you said, like of like fighting and what that means, but then fighting against your own grief and your own issues. And I think it's really easy for audience members to see a movie like Aeon Flux and what happened and just kind of write it off as like, oh, what a mess, whatever. But I think you're right in that there was probably a big learning process for her to say, okay, you know what, I think I'm just going to do movies that like I want to do and that means something to me, as opposed to having a big studio, you know, and then come in and kind of do whatever they want to it, sort of, you know what I mean? Like there's something that feels like it was very much learned, and that's reflected in the rest of her filmography.
1,000%. Yeah, I could not have actually said that better. That's it, basically. Everything has to be kinetic energy. Everything has to just go from one step to the next. She's more than just an adapter, because you see so many other filmmakers who, you know, the minute they do a Sundance favorite, they're instantly offered everything. Hey, want to do a Blumhouse horror film? Hey, want to do a superhero movie? And then now you've just become a mainstream indie person turned merc for hire. And I think she just strongly worked against that. And it's just so wild how, yeah, it's like Sony just was praising her for Girl Fight's success, and then yeah, Paramount disowned Ion Flux, and she said, you know what, I could disown this like everyone else, but I'm not going to do that. I gotta own this, because I did have a final say in this before you guys went in here. And you know, did you ever see Jennifer's Body? That was like her third movie she did.
Yes, I love Jennifer's Body.
And it's so wild. The trailer wrecked it. At that point, you know, the Razzies were kind of infecting our society. They were always making fun of Megan Fox and all these other filmmakers. And I saw it years later and I was like, you know, I can live with this. This is a typical Gremlins, Critters, Wishmaster kind of horror comedy. It's really over the top. It's not, you know, too lowbrow like Species or anything. It's just silly, it's just wacky and outrageous, and it's got some good makeup and amusing lines. I mean, Diablo Cody from freaking Juno wrote this, you know.
Yeah, and she caught a lot of flack too, I feel like, for it, because it was like you said, the marketing of it was so out there.
I didn't know it was a comedy. It just looked like a dumb after school stalker movie, and they were churning those out by the billions. It's like, okay, this is the billion Scream knockoff. And it's like, no, it's not even close, but thanks Fox for ruining it.
Exactly. And like, they definitely, like, the marketing definitely played up like, oh, we got hot Megan Fox in here. Ooh. And like, then and that's when the joke. It,
we're taking all these actors who are cute, and they're saying all the most outrageous stuff you would never expect them to play, and it's making fun of high school trends, and it's just now everyone's chastised me when I don't watch a trailer. I'm like, when has it ever been on the money? When has it ever been
truly? And nowadays too, I feel like, I mean, I might just sound like a boomer saying this, I don't know, like, they literally do, they give way too much away in trailers nowadays, like, truly, like,
or they pull a Deadpool where they're a trailer within a trailer. I'm like, so all this shit that you've just shown us isn't even in the goddamn movie.
I've seen so many movies recently where it's like, okay, that part was great, had I not known that was coming because I saw the stupid trailer. Like, yeah, I think marketing, we can't get tricked by it because it happens far too often.
Right. So for those who are TV viewers who haven't seen Yellow Jackets or her other work yet, you might have seen her recurring directing roles on Halt and Catch Fire, Man in the High Castle, Casual, and Billions. So she's guest directed Stephen King's The Outsider and Chicago Fire and The L Word. But yeah, for a while, I thought she was kind of going to become kind of like Kimberly Pierce, where she was kind of a low-key indie filmmaker and then just casually doing some TV work, even though she should still be so much bigger right now. I think she should totally be up there with all the other, the B crowd, I call them, the ones who you want to see do more stuff, like the Scott Derricksons, the Antoine Fuqua's, just the other, the Otto DuVarney's, just all these indie kings and queens who are very influential, everyone loves working with, and it doesn't matter if their movies get mixed to excellent reviews. Everyone's going to go out and see it because there's something atypical about the material illustrated.
Can I ask, why do you think she's not quite there yet? Like, do you think that's...
It was the Ion Flux thing. Because that's just it. If a movie's not a hit... I mean, I remember when Ion Flux came out, and I was past it. I was seeing the trend and how the media would instantly, you know, studios would release a movie to cash in on award-winning actors being in them, and of course they were made for the popcorn crowd, they weren't made for a serious crowd. And I think at that point, this was where everyone was getting sick of Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb trolls, and it was years before everyone was just saying, now if you really wanted to say something, just go on and be a YouTuber or remember Vine, you know, go on and just do amusing reviews. And I think she just stuck to her guns and said, I'm going to keep being the indie crowd. And I got all her writers who she's worked with, she's continued to work with. It's just, there's not much you can do. And I think that's just it. Studios, when they tamper with it and it's not a success, they always like to act like it's whoever the director or the main star was. It does not matter that they tampered with it. And I've seen the same thing with anyone, all these hit TV actors who you see now, they've been on the same boat. They've been on the same ride where if a pilot doesn't make it to air, it's all, Paget Brewster said this in a recent interview on Annie Richter's podcast. He's just like, they always have you on the shitter list. He's like, you are the reason this didn't get picked up. There's something about you. And it's like, what do I have to do with it? I'm just interpreting what you scripted.
Right. God, that's so awful. Like, that's really just, I don't know, blaming one singular person for why something wasn't. Yeah, like, truly, because it's a myriad of reasons why things don't work out well. And I just don't, I don't like that. I think that's so awful. But you're probably right. Like, that was supposed to be a huge movie. And like, close to the start of her career, and it was really easy just to go, oh, you know what, she wasn't prepared, you know, like, just throw it on her. But you know, one thing positive that did come out of it, I guess, was the two writers on that. One is her husband, and
Phil Hay, all three of them,
all three of them, you know, continue to work, did The Invitation together, did Destroyer together. So I don't know. That's something nice, I guess.
I think
as
she's
much good as you can.
She's a great feminist voice too. Like, she's mm-hmm. really good at just showing how people find their own empowerment, find their own journey. And sometimes there's not a beginning or an end, really. This just kind of ends when your stress level has just gone out the door, or the secret's revealed and now you got to process it. And by that point, the movie is over.
Yes. And I think that that's reflected in The Invitation and Destroyer and Yellow Jackets, where these rather flawed female characters are still, like, you don't dislike them. Like, you're still rooting for them. And I think there's just so many pieces of works of her, especially like The Invitation, where it's such a character-driven film, where I can just sort of see, like, I think a lot of this is really working because of proper communication from the director to the actors. Yeah,
you, like, and I have both been on film sets, and we've all seen our share of it. You know, everyone's seen a share of, you know, whoever's the guest director gets excused by the producer and they fill in some backup shots. We've seen lighting take a while to set up. We've seen actors flub a line. We've seen stunt coordinator get and extra coordinators get everything all in line, you know, for all the B-roll shots and the cranes start operating. The minute something goes out of line, you know, it's all downhill from there. And I don't know what, like you say, I don't know why she wouldn't be an invaluable source at this point. She's already shown beyond proof. You know, it's kind of like when you go to a job interview and you have all the people like your credentials, but they just, for whatever reason, don't want to hire you. It's either, I just don't like your persona, or I just don't know. You're just not standing out to me from the rest of the pack. And I don't know why anyone wouldn't trust her. She's done movies of all kinds of budgets. Viewers are heavily reacting to her various themes, everything from, wow, that song really made the scene stand out more. Wow, that visual shot, that wasn't eye candy, that was eye catching, that was empowering or horrifying or, you know, thrilling. You got all these moods channeling from her. So why not give her another chance? And
yeah,
outside of TV, and don't get me wrong, she's done some good shows, and she said, sorry, that she's returning to Yellow Jackets. So I saw she was attached to like another horror anthology. She's a big fan of Jonathan Glazer, so she's adapting a prequel of his movie Sexy Beasts for one of those cable outlets. So if she wants to keep doing TV, that's fine, but I hope she gets to do even more just movie character studies.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that she was able to sort of bring that through Yellow Jackets, but I agree that, like, her movies are so, like, beautiful in how they study these flawed characters, and I really appreciate that, and I really enjoy it. And
how they have different sides to every person. It's the simplest thing, but how she outlines it, I would totally trust her to do if she had to do a schizophrenic psychodrama or a just middle-aged life crisis. She would be first up who I would ring if I was a producer, because it's just like she knows all these cues and everything, and it's just what I'm curious to see her other short films that she's done, and I just haven't been able to find Sleeping Beauties or Speechless anywhere.
No, me neither. No, I haven't been able to. But yeah, I think again, like, just speaking on, like, her, what seems to me like her proper, like, communication style with the actors, I've also noticed that in especially The Invitation and Destroyer, it feels like the performers know exactly what they're supposed to do. Like, they get it. Like, they get the beats. They understand the scene. And I think that that speaks a lot to her ability to understand humans and be able to
Human help. Nature is everything. Yes. She connects to. She doesn't want to do something which is, you know, good on you if you love it, but she doesn't want to do just, you know, mindless violence or just the super friends arrive in town to save the day. She wants an actual, it's just like something the audience will say, man, I've been in that situation, or I've wondered about that, or I've had a fever dream like this.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, I mean, I think that's why she cast a bunch of semi-knowns, non-knowns, you know, who've been around for years in Invitation. And Nicole Kidman, I think she broke her contract. She was like, she wanted to audition for this role. She loved the script for Destroyer so much. So she's totally unrecognizable. And I totally agree with my pal Anthony. This is one of her best roles ever. I was just like, on how being a narc can destroy one's integrity, if not mm-hmm. lifestyle. And like you say, it's she connects so much with humanity. That's all she wants to do. And I can't say that about so many other filmmakers. There's some who can. I'm seeing a lot of comedians who are trying to do horror, and personally, I'm just like, stay in your cage. Just do a campy after school college movie. You
know? Yeah, we can't all be Jordan Peele guys. Come on.
Not everyone is. Well, because Jordan Peele understands social commentary, and this is mm-hmm. like, you guys are just inserting Easter eggs and even casting comedians in serious roles. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of comedians who could do serious stuff, but not all of them are up to the task, or I don't know, are able to channel all the different tones. And I don't know, I don't want to go too much about that. But I mean, yeah, she was at Cannes Film Festival and all these other festivals that have seen her stuff, but I hope she gets a primetime Emmy soon for Yellow Jackets.
She was nominated for Best Directing at this recent go of Emmys. And like, that was a really stacked nomination. I
was surprised at the turnouts, especially when they got to the comedy section. I was like, what? How do you even choose?
Right. And like, so she, I mean, for the pilot of Yellow Jackets, she was also against Laureen Scafaria for Succession, Catherine Yan for Succession. Then we had the director for the first episode of Squid Game, who ultimately won, which was like, okay, yeah.
I didn't see that section.
Yeah. So like, I was really, really hoping for it because I love the pilot of Yellow Jackets. I think it's just so perfect for her to have directed it. But yeah, I would love for her to be the fourth woman to win an Emmy for directing. And then, right? Yeah, like you said, if I'm a producer and I'm doing some sort of character-driven thriller, I mean, I want her. Like, I would love
all the money in the world. She deserves all the marketing because it's just like,
yes.
There's so many other people who will take all this extra money and they won't use half of it. It's just practically under the table money.
Yeah, I agree. Like, that's the thing too, and that's sort of what's kind of made me eye roll at how people in the industry treat her career is that. Going back to like Jennifer's
Body.
She's a
one-hit wonder. Yeah. I was like, what does a one-hit wonder mean? No.
And I disagree with that take, but you know, like, I think
seen the movie, or are they just going to, oh, Rotten Tomatoes is always right. Okay.
Right.
We have nothing in common.
Exactly. No. You can't listen to the critics. They're just usually very harsh already out the gate. But like, I think what I would love for her in her career is just market her movies better, because there's been a really crappy track record going back to, you know, Jennifer's Body. Like, how do we market this? Because like I remember when Destroyer came out and the whole marketing around it was like, whoa, Nicole Kidman looks so different. And it's like, yeah, she definitely does.
No,
but
shit,
there's
Sherlock.
A much. Yeah. I remember seeing so many articles that were like, Nicole Kidman's unrecognizable. It's like, yeah, okay. But like, there could have been a lot more about like what the story is and just sell it better. And like, the Invitation, I think could have been like a Ready or Not style, almost like indie, big, but like well-received low budget horror, had it been like marketed correctly, which I don't know if it was. But like, yeah, let's just like get better at marketing her movies if she's gonna do more, please, because she deserves eyes on those movies for sure.
Yeah, and keep those contacts close, because you know, some of these producers know the whole market is oversaturated and everything. And I think with recent scandals, especially the guys who were at Emmett Furla, I think a lot of people are getting sick of the ones producers who claim to be producers but are really just Wall Street mm-hmm. tycoons with money to burn who just want a
yes.
name on there. So I think I'm only hoping that the market just keeps opening up, and especially with the Weinsteins finally hitting the road, you know.
right. Yeah. And like, I think too, you know, there's so many weird sort of arguments about, oh, you know, superhero movies, Marvel, these big action movies are taking over. And I don't like adhere to one way or the other on that side of the argument, but like when we're looking for very unique, like back to what movies used to be kind of stuff, like she's right there.
Weird when people will say what they used to be is like, you don't know if they're just getting into the woke arguments or if they're actually or if they just want something politically incorrect. Well, what does that mean? And it's like, okay,
right,
because
right.
There have been people who've done homages and some of them have been cool and others I've been like, okay, well, you filmed it in black and white but the story wasn't there. I think it's so funny you bring that up. My sister was doing that when she saw Neil Blomkamp and of District 9 and Elysium fame and Dennis Villeneuve, you know, Prisoners and Dune fame were getting into an argument. Villeneuve's like, fuck superhero movies. And Blomkamp was like, fuck you. I love superhero movies. And it's like, she wanted me to take a side. I'm like, I love them both.
Right.
I respect both their opinions. Why do I give a fuck? They don't like it. They don't like it. There's nothing that's going to change. And I personally am sick of superhero movies. We just did a Marvel and DC ranking separate and none of our ratings were consistent. And I was just like, just rank them on a 5-star thing. And by the way, this is our last superhero show. So we're going to keep making these for 5 more decades. So
we've done a lot of DC movies on our show. Oh God. And some of them are like, oh my God, leave it.
Like, did you like the Snyder Cut or was it too much?
I really liked the Snyder Cut, actually. I thought it was okay, but like compared to the first one, which was horrendous, the Jaws cut, oh my God, like it was arguably like before it came out I was definitely on the side of like, who cares, like whatever, it's just a director's cut, whatever, who cares.
I was kind of about that either because the media was just going back and forth and you had all these inexcusable, just unprofessional behind the scenes stories.
Yeah.
People, CGI beards, and I was like, not since I thought we were past Heaven's Gate or Waterworld type catastrophes where the movie is overshadowed by all this just stuff that the press got a hold of. And you're like, wow, you couldn't have fucked up more if you tried.
Right. But then when I watched, so we did a bonus episode, which was like, everyone gets a second chance with the Justice League because of the Snyder Cut. And when I watched it, I was like, okay, yeah, no, this is actually a completely different movie than what we originally got. So like, I understand why this cut is out. I don't think we need an Ayer cut for Suicide Squad. I'll say that. But like,
for the Snyder Cut. I said as a David Ayer fan, but yeah, no. We don't need any more.
But like, Snyder Cut, I feel like was an anomaly in that, like, yeah, this actually was a completely different movie. It was long, I will say that, but it was way more entertaining than the original cut. I'll say that.
Totally. And at this point, yeah, you know, people got to remember, you don't always get a second chance and you shouldn't rely on a second chance or people signing petitions just saying come out with another cut. But it is eye opening, is like different edits, different crowds, different crews determine all this. And I think I would like to see Karin even teach a film school. Just like,
oh, yeah.
Teach a L.A., Austin, or even Louisiana course. Give some tips and tricks on how to go for your vision, because you've seen other celebrity guests and some of them have been kind of just really insightful. I've loved the master classes, how they go to the simplest. Ron Howard's one I totally recommend for anyone if you're going to take any of those, because he goes up and down the aisle talking about staging. You know, obviously you're already invested in this one way or the other. The story might be the same, but you got some emotional rise out of it, or you just connect with it, you find it interesting, so you can do something with it. It's like, so now just worry about the staging. You know, where's everyone walking in the scene? You already got great actors. Where should they go? Tell them where to go.
I think she would be incredible at, like you said, masterclass or a guest professor or something, because she's
atypical indie, even, you know, because you see all the other indie guys, you know, like Rodriguez and Kevin Smith, and they just go back to the basics. It's like, okay, now we need something beyond the 90s, the post-digital age.
Yes.
Who can we talk to about that? Because you and I have all been on film sets. I'm sick to death of the arguments about what camera is a favorite or not. And it's like irrelevant. Choose what you're going to shoot on. Choose your budget. And now everyone's going back to budgets. It's just like, you can shoot it for 10,000 or you can shoot it for 2 million, but you got to pick one and stick to it.
Right.
I consider it an eBay bid. How high will you go before you tap out and say no more? It's not worth that much.
Right. And like, there's something that where she, I feel like, goes back to the basics, the rawness of a film
rawness,
set where
yes.
It's not about a camera, it's not about a budget, it's about here and now with these
the
actors, with this location, yes, with the feeling. And that's what I think I am so attracted to her work about, and why she would be such a good teacher, because she'll go, no, like, we brush past that and get right to what matters. And
she focuses on the music.
Yes, her sound.
She said that in the commentary
for
Ghostfight.
Yes.
I doubt she stopped. I'm sure she did that with everything else she's done, because the music does give me goosebumps, especially those last two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, oof. Grizzly.
Yes. I have noticed that not only the music is very purposeful, but the sound design in general, like, why do we have, you know, this sound in this particular moment? Like, it just all feels very purposeful. And I think the music also, I think, is reflected in Jennifer's body, because I know Diablo Cody is also
it's
a filmmaker.
It's 1 minute,
likes...
then it's freaky. Mm-hmm. When it wants
yeah,
to be.
And the music goes a long way when you're changing tones like that.
Right? Yeah, especially when you know she kind of... The music's interesting. If I recall correctly, tell me if I'm wrong. I recall there was a kind of a musical kind of tiptoe, if that makes sense. Like, just kind of in there.
In which one?
Jennifer's body. I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't going for camp level. It was going kind of just more for, yeah, just like, we're going to be guffawing here, even though it's, you know, this is still a horror movie.
Right. You still should have like a little bit of a lighter energy with this horror movie, because it's campy and fun.
1,000%. So, we are out of time. I had like another chat at 7 and I got another chat at 8.
Oh man. Yeah. That flew by.
However, well, my internet didn't help. So, let me know when you want to try Yellow Jackets and Fear Street, I guess.
Yeah.
And this was a delight. What can we expect from Second Chance podcast?
So we have a lot of movies down the pipeline. Some awful and crazy, like Roar, the iconic Roar with Tippi Hedren.
I thought you meant the new Tiger movie that dressed up.
Well, we chose Roar because, hey, there's another Tigers and Lions movie.
Okay.
With Elba, so we got to revisit Roar, and that's a wild time. And then we'll be doing our horror section soon, too, where we are probably going to do Halloween Season of the Witch and some of the Chucky movies, some really wild times. And then after that, yep, then we'll get into some of our award season movies where we revisit crazy ones. Like last season, we did Crash, which was a wild time. But yeah, we're always open to watching good, the bad, the divisive, whatever. If you want us to like recap a movie for you that you've thought of that have been like, hey, I haven't thought about this movie in a while, will you just watch it for me and tell me what you think? We'll do it.
Wishmaster.
Okay, all right, for you, yeah, we'll do it.
I think you'll like it, actually.
I've never watched it, but okay, I'll give it a go.
Who knows? You might hit it. You might say, what the fuck is this shit? And toss the disc on.
Well, yeah, this was great. Before you have to go, do you typically do Thursdays? Is that the best for you to record, or is there...
Monday through Thursdays are open, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, the rest of... Well, it's already Thursday. Next week, I can't do like Monday, but yeah, we'll definitely message and figure out a time for the other ones. I only watched the pilot of Yellow Jackets, so now this is a great excuse to watch the whole show. I love it so much. So yeah, this is awesome. And yeah, we'll be in touch. I'm totally willing to come back and talk about the other two things.
1,000%, my dudette.
Well, this was so awesome. Thank you so much for having
me.
Thank
you. It's good to have a new voice on here. And
oh, thanks.
Best of luck. Hopefully none of the movies are too deep hurting where It's kind of like Joe Bob or Elvira, where you're like, damn you, why did you bring this awful movie to my attention?
I mean, we did Geely, so anything after
The Room
that
2.0,
is great.
I call it.
Yeah. So I feel like now I have such thick skin when it comes to
watching
movies.
I keep going
movies.
To Rift Tracks, asking them to do that. I'm like, come on, I know you can afford it. I know Sony will give you the money. Keep going into cult filmmakers' filmographies.
Oh, awesome. You too. Thanks again. This was really fun.
1000%. I
open. All right. Yeah, you take care.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.